Flashman and the Angel of the Lord by George MacDonald Fraser, continued. Cassette 2, side 1.
Well, this was a free and easy miss, if you like, for no mamma of Simla or Belgravia would have permitted a billet as warm as this one. She might as well have added PPS bed at 10 sharp. But then she had no mamma, and papa was 700 miles away, bless his black heart. He'd warned her off, that was plain, but this was a filly who'd delight in defiance from what I'd seen of her. And she wanted the handsomest colonel in the army to gratify her. The saucy little spanker. And who could blame her? I tingled at the thought of those soft shoulders and the wanton glint in the black eyes. Aye, but what about the balefire glint in dear papa's? For a second I quailed. But no, I couldn't let this one slip by. Don't mistake me, I'm not one of those who count danger an added spice, least of all in Hochmagandy, as Elspeth used to call it whenever I got her tipsy. But here, while there was no risk at all, there would be a special zest to romp in Spring's daughter. The pity was that he'd never know, unless I wrote him a line when I was safe in England. Dear Prospero, have Roger Miranda. Oh, brave new world, the weather continues fine. Yours ever, Caliban. He'd absolutely die of rage. Better still, she might present him with a little supercargo 9 months hence. Gad, that would be an interesting infant. Flash Spring with a dash of fellaheen. Oh, merry thoughts. I made my packages then and there, whistling, and settled up, for the best plan would be to outstay the other guests, gallop the night away, kiss her a tearful farewell, and tool straight down to the mail tender. I'd be halfway home before the swine was back from Grahamstown. Oh, I must let him know somehow he'd never dare come back to England to seek revenge. Would he? I had another qualm at the memory of those glaring eyes and murderous fury. Well, we'd see. The carriage was there, sharp on 12, Malay coachman and all, and I was in prime fettle as we bowled through the suburbs, which were a great contrast to the shabby port, being very grand even in those days, with shady avenues of oak and clumps of silver trees, and fine houses among the green. It was Cape Summer, and the whole countryside was ablaze with garden blossoms and the famous wildflowers. Chateau Spring, which stood by the sea, was even more splendid than I'd imagined. A lofty white colonial mansion in wide grounds, fit to rival Kew, with a marble bathing pool secluded among rhododendrons. And as I waited in the airy hall, admiring the circular sweep of the double staircase and inhaling the blissful aroma of money, I reflected that there's no gain like the ill-gotten. It beats honest accumulation hands down. I'd expected the place to be alive with company, but there wasn't a soul except the ancient black butler who'd gone to announce me, and I found myself wondering about that capital H she'd put on home in her note. She was half-caste, you see, and they put far more stock in being English than we who take it for granted. So she'd spelled it Home, H-O-M-E, with a capital H, where she'd never been, and likely never would be. Not that being coloured, as they call it down yonder, mattered much in those days. Not with a white father who could have bought Natal and would have kicked the life out of anyone who didn't treat his daughter like a duchess. Still, I wondered how many mamas with eligible sons regretted previous engagements. And I was just concluding hornily that I was probably the only guest when...
Sir Harry.
Here she was, sailing down the staircase, and I took in breath at the sight of her. She was wearing a dress of pale muslin, sari style, that clung like a gauzy skin, but flounced out below the knee above thonged sandals. One ivory shoulder and both arms were bare. And as she swept towards me with a swift, graceful stride, the flimsy material outlined her figure. Gad, it was all there. She carried a long scarf of black silk over one arm. And then, to my astonishment, I saw it was her hair, gathered in from behind.
Sir Harry.
Again with a glowing smile and her free hand extended. And since we were alone and I was bursting with buck, I pressed me lips to her fingers. Anne nuzzled swiftly up her naked arm in Flashy's flank attack, across shoulder and neck to her cheek, and fastened on her full red lips. She didn't even gasp. After a second, her mouth opened wide, and when I drew her in with a hand on her rump, she clung like a good'un while I kneaded avidly and breathed in her heavy perfume. And then the blasted butler's step sounded at the stairhead, and she broke away, flushed and laughing, and quickly drew herself up, mock demure.
"How do you do, Sir Harry?"
says she, bobbing a curtsy.
"So kind of you to call. May I offer you some refreshment?"
"Another of the same, ma'am, if you please," says I, and she burst out laughing and drew me out into a shady veranda commanding a splendid view of the sunlit bay. There was a low table with liquor and tidbits, for two, I noticed, and cushioned rattan swing chairs, and when the butler had poured us iced slings and tottered away, she made pretty work of seating herself, shrugging this way and that to display her shape, and sweeping that wondrously long hair over the back of her seat. I'd known at first sight that she was a great show-off, and now she raised her glass with a flourish in smiling salute.
"That is iced brandy and orange, Sir Harry. Your favorite in New Orleans, so Papa told me. Among other things, oh yes."
"Steady now. Observant chap, Papa. How the blazes had he come to tell her that? But you mustn't believe all he tells you, you know."
"Oh, but I want to,"
cries she, quite the rogue.
"Such a shocking character he gave you. You cannot imagine."
She sat erect, counting on slim fingers.
"Let me see. All your naughty ways, drinking and smoking, and that you are a very shameless rake. But he would give no particulars. Was that not mean of him? Oh, and that you were a scoundrel and told stretchers, and he said you were most cowardly, which I did not believe. You are so famous."
"But you believe the rest, eh?"
"But of course, Harry."
Her voice had the native sing-song that can be delightful in a woman, but in her excitement the chi-chi vowels slipped out hot and strong, and for an instant the ivory skin seemed to shade darker, and the sharp nose and heavy brows more pronounced, as she gestured and prattled, and I admired the stirring curves of breast and hip under the flimsy muslin. Never mind the pasture it comes from, it's the meat that matters.
"Papa said of all the bad men he had known, you are quite the worst."
She shook her head wide-eyed.
"So of course I must see for myself, you know. Are you so very wicked, Harry?"
"Yeah, I'll show you," says I, and lunged at her, but she drew back with a pretty little comical flutter towards the hall, where I suppose the butler was lurking, and pressed me to try the tidbits, especially a great sticky bowl of creamed chocolate, in summer, which she spooned into herself with gluttonous delicacy between sips at her sling, teasing me with sidelong smiles and assuring me that the mixture was
quite heavenly.
Well, women flirt always to bed. There are the kittens who like to be tickled, and the cats who must be coaxed while they pretend to claw, and the tigresses who have only one end in mind, so to speak. I'd marked Miranda Spring as a novice tigress at our first meeting, and our grapple in the hall had shown her a willing one. If it amused her to play the wanton puss, well, she was 17, and a chi-chi, and they're a theatrical breed, so I didn't mind, as long as she didn't prove a mouse, as some of these brazen chits do at the first pop of a button. She seemed nervous and randy together. Yet was there a gleam of triumph in the eager smile? I probably couldn't believe her luck. "So Papa warned you off, did he? And did he tell you he'd sworn to kill me if I came near you?"
"Oh, yes. Jolly exciting. He's so jealous, you know. It is a great bore, for he has kept away all sorts of boys. Men, I mean. Always the ones I like best, too. Not saying he would kill them, you understand?
She giggled.
But you know how he can be.
Just an inkling. Cramps your style, does he? She tossed her head and dabbed cream from her lips with a fold of her dress.
Not when he's in Grahamstown.
When the cat's away, eh? Finished your pudding, have you? Very good, let's play. I made another lunge and got home, this time seizing her bosom and stopping her mouth, and the lustful slut lay there revelling in it, thrusting her tongue between my teeth with never a thought for the butler. And I was wondering how we were going to perform the capital act on a cane swing only 4 feet long when she purred in my ear.
Once upon a time the cat came home.
Fortunately the swing was anchored, or we'd have been over.
What? Do you mean...
Oh, not from Grahamstown, silly. Papa was here in town, but not expected. It was 2 years ago when I was only 15, and quite stupid, you know. And there was a French gentleman from Mauritius, much older, but whom I liked ever so. And Papa flew into a great rage and forbade him to see me. But then Papa was absent, and Michel came to the house, to my room quite late, and Papa came home from the club quite early.
Jesus, what then?
Nothing. Then Papa looked at him in that way he has and said, "You're receipted and filed, mister." And Michel laughed at him and went away.
You're a better man than I am, Michel, thinks I.
And a little time after they found poor Michel on Robben Island, he had been flogged to death with a jambok.
Just what a fella needs to hear when he's coming to the boil, you'll agree. But I'm the lad who bulled a Malay charmer in the midst of a battle on the Batang Lupar, regardless of shot and steel. And now the wicked bitch was halfway down my throat and rummaging below stairs with an expert hand. And while I didn't doubt her story, knowing her fiend of a father, I knew she'd told it only to plague me. And spring was in Grahamstown. I'd inquired. "I'll give you jambok, my lady," growls I, and lifted her bodily out of the swing. But even as I cast about for galloping room, she left off gnawing at me and panted,
"Wait, let me show you."
I set her down, and she seized my hand, hurrying me down to the garden and through a screen of shrubs to a small stone jetty beyond. And there was the smartest little steam yacht moored, all brass and varnish shining in the sun, and not a soul aboard that I could see.
"For our picnic,"
says she, and her voice was shrill with excitement. She led the way up the swaying plank, and I followed, slavering at the plump stern, bobbing out of the muslin, and down into the cool shadows of a spacious cabin. I seized her, fore and aft, but she slipped from my lustful grasp, whispering,
"A moment,"
and slammed a door in my face. While I tore off my clobber, I had time to look about me and note that J.C. Spring, M.A., did himself as well afloat as he did ashore. There was polished walnut and brocade, velvet curtains on the ports, fine carpet and leather furniture, and even a fireplace with a painting of some Greek idiots in beards. It was a bigger craft than I'd realized, and rivaled the one in which Suleiman Usman had carried us to Singapore. Through an open door I could see a lavatory in marble and glass, with a patent shower bath, which for some reason made me randier than ever. And I pounded on her door, roaring endearments. It swung open under my fist, and there she was, on t'other side of the bed, posed with her back to the bulkhead. For a moment I stood staring, and Spring and old Arnold would have been proud of me if my first thought was, "Andromeda on her rock, awaiting the monster." Ha-ha! Which proves the benefit of a grounding in the classics. She was stark naked, and yet entirely clad, for she had cinched in her long hair with a white ribbon round her neck, so that it framed her face like a cowl, while beneath the ribbon it hung in a shimmering black curtain that covered her almost to her ankles. Her arms were spread out, desperate-like on the panelling, and as I goggled, she pushed one knee through the silky tresses and pouted at me. We never went near the bed, for it would have been a shame to disturb her tableau vivant much. I just heaved her up and piled in against the panels, grunting for joy, and I'll swear the boat rocked at its moorings, for she teased no longer when it came to serious work, and I wasn't for lingering myself. It was splendid fun while it lasted, which wasn't till she began to shudder and scream and tried to throttle me with her hair, so I romped her up and down all the way to the lavatory where we finished the business under the patent shower bath. Once I got the knack of the damn thing, which ain't easy with a mad nymph clinging to your manly chest. Most refreshing it was, though, and brought back memories of Sancierre, my Apache princess, who was partial to coupling under waterfalls, which is deuced cold, by the way, and the pebbles don't help. Miranda Spring knew a trick worth two of that, for when we'd come to our senses and toweled each other dry, with much coy snickering on her part, she showed me to a little alcove off the main cabin where an excellent collation was laid out under covers, with bubbly in a bucket. We recruited our energies with lobster and chicken, but when I proposed that we finish off the wine on deck, she came all over languid and said we would be ever so comfy on the bed. And if you'd seen that exquisite young body artfully swathed in her hair with those fine ivory poonts thrusting impotently through it, you'd have agreed. But she must finish her dessert, too. Like all Chi-Chis, she had a passion for sugary confections. So she brought it to bed, if you please, and gorged herself on eclairs and cream slices while I fondled her, well content to play restfully for a change. Not so, madam. Being a greedy little animal, she must satisfy both her appetites at once, and call me conservative, if you will. I hold that a woman who gallops you while consuming a bowl of blancmange is wanting in respect. I left off nibbling her tits to rebuke her bad form, but the saucy little gannet stuck out her tongue and went on eating and cantering in a most leisurely fashion. Right, my lass, thinks I, and waited until she downed the last cherry and licked the spoon, settled herself for a rousing finish, and was beginning to moan and squeal in ecstatic frenzy, at which point I gave an elaborate yawn, hoisted her gently from the saddle, and announced that I was going on deck for a swim. She squawked like a staggered hen, eyes still rolling.
Swim? Why, now? No, not yet.
Why not? Better than all this boring frosting in bed, what? Come along, a dipple to you now, end of good. I gave them a playful flip. Keep you in trim, you know.
Parrying?
If you could imagine Anderson's mermaid move from dazed bewilderment to screaming passion in an instant, you have Miranda.
Parrying me? You...
But even as I prepared to parry a clawing attack, to my amazement, her rage gave way to sudden consternation, and then her arms were round my neck, and she was pleading frantically with me to stay, kissing and fondling and exerting her small strength to pull me down.
Oh, no, please, Harry, please, don't go, please. I am ever so sorry. Oh, I was wicked to tease you. Mustn't go up, not yet. Please stay. Love me, Harry. Oh, please, don't go.
Changeable chit, ain't you? No, miss, I'm going topsides for a swim and some sunshine.
No.
It was a squeal of real alarm.
Please, you must stay here.
She fairly writhed onto me, gasping. Well, I've known I'm eager, but this was flattery of the most persuasive kind.
Please, Harry, love me now, oh, do.
Well, no, later. If you're a good little girl after my swim.
Not now, oh, I shall be a bad big girl.
She gave a whimper of entreaty.
Stay with me and I will be very bad. Don't go and I will.
She put her lips to my ear, giggling, and whispered. I was so taken aback, I may well have blushed. Good God, I never heard the like. Why, you abandoned brat. Where on earth did you hear of such... At school? I don't believe it. She nodded gleefully, eyes shining, and I was speechless. Depraved women I've known, thank heaven, but this one was barely out of dancing class, and here she was proposing debauchery that would have scandalized a Cairo pimp. Heavens, it was new to me even, and I told her so. She smiled and bared her teeth.
Ah, oh, then you will certainly not go on deck just yet,
whispers she.
You will stay with wicked Miranda, yes?
Well, a gentleman should always indulge the whims of the frail sex, even if it does mean foregoing a refreshing swim. But I confess that if I hadn't been a degenerate swine myself, her behaviour thereafter would have shocked me. I'd have thought, at 36, and having enjoyed the attentions of Lola Montez, Susie Willink, my darling Elspeth, and other inventive amorists too numerous to mention, that I'd nothing to learn about dalliance. But by the time young Miranda, 17, I mean to say, had had a girlish will of me, and I was lying more dead than alive in the shower bath, I could barely gasp one of Spring's Latin tags. Ex Africa semper aliquid novi. Out of Africa, there's always something new. By gum. I must have managed to crawl back to the bed, but when I woke, it was growing dusk, and Miranda was dressed and wearing an apron, humming merrily as she cooked omelettes in the galley for our supper, while I lay reflecting on the lack of supervision in colonial finishing schools, and wondered if I'd be fit for more jollity before the mail tender left in the morning. I ate my omelette with a trembling hand, but when she teased me into sharing asparagus with her and nibbling towards each other along the spear until our mouths met, I began to revive and was all for it when she said we should spend the night aboard and her butler would see my traps taken down to the wharf in good time.
But I shall be quite desolate at parting, for I have never known anyone as jolly as you are,
cries she, stroking my whiskers.
You are ever so excessively wicked. Far worse than Papa said.
Then we're a pair. Tell you what, let's take a turn on deck, and then we'll play piquet. And if you cheat, I'll tie you up in that Rapunzel hair of yours and show you what wickedness is.
But I am the greatest cheat,
laughs she. So we went on deck, and I had to tell her the story of Rapunzel, which she'd never heard, while she nestled against me by the rail in the warm darkness, with the water chuckling against the hull and the last amber glow dying above the western rim. It was the place to linger with a girl, but presently it grew chilly, so we went down to our hand of piquet. She was no cheat at all, though, so I had to teach her, but once or twice I wondered if her mind was on the game at all, if she kept glancing at the clock. And when it struck, she started and fumbled her cards and apologized, laughing like a schoolgirl.
Clumsy Clara.
The nursery exclamation reminded me what a child she was. Lord love us, I'd been married before she was born. Aye, and a damned odd child behind the vivacious chatter and mischievous smile with her Babylonian bedroom manners. Peculiar lusts are supposed to be a male prerogative. Well, look at me. But the truth is we ain't in it with the likes of the Empress Tsu Hsi, or Lola the hairbrush, or that Russian aunt I knew who went in for flogging in steam baths. Or Miranda Spring, not yet of age, smiling brightly to cover a little yawn. Jaded from her mattress exertions, no doubt. We'll brisk you up presently, thinks I, with a few of those Hindu gymnastics that Mrs. Leslie of Meerut was so partial to. There was a vague sound from somewhere outside, and then a heavy footfall on the deck over our heads. The butler from the house, was my first thought. And Miranda dropped a card in shuffling, retrieved it, and offered me the pack to cut. Who is it? Says I, and she glanced at the clock. Suddenly I realized she was trembling. But it was excitement, not fear, and the smile in the black eyes was one of pure triumph.
That will be Papa at last,
she said. There is, as that sound chap Ecclesiastes says, a time to get, and if I've reached the age of 91, it's because I've always been able to recognize it. I was afoot on the word Papa and streaking for the bed cabin where I knew there was a window. I wrenched the door open and raced through into the bloody lavatory, and by the time I was out again it was too late. The biggest Malay I've ever seen, a huge yellow villain clad only in duck trousers and with arms like horses, was at the foot of the companion, making way for John Charity Spring in full war paint, reefer jacket, pilot cap, and a face like an Old Testament prophet. He took in the scene, hands thrust into pockets, and growled to the Malay. On deck, Jumbo, and if he sticks his neck out, break it. He turned his glare on Miranda, who was still seated, the pack in her hands, and barked at her. Did this thing molest you? She riffled the cards, cool as you like, while my bowels dissolved.
No, Papa, he did not.
He tried, though, Ali. I know the villain. His voice rose to its accustomed roar. Did he lay his vile hands on you? Answer me. Oh, Christ, I thought it's the finish. But she simply glanced at me with infinite scorn, shrugged her slim shoulders, and made an inelegant spitting noise. Spring stood breathing like a bellows, his wild eyes moving from one to the other of us. I knew better than to utter a denial. And I didn't laugh either, like rash Michel. Aye, I'll swear he did, though, didn't you, you lousy lecher? He strode to confront me, jerking his fist from his pocket, his jaw working in fury. Didn't you? By God!
Oh, Papa, of course he tried to kiss me. Do you think he's the first? I'm nearly 18, you know.
If ever a voice stamped its foot, hers did. She sounded like an impatient governess.
I am not a child. What were you expecting, after all?
She tossed her head.
But he is just a great bully and a great coward, as you said.
His breath was rasping on my face and his eyes were like a mad dog's, but suddenly he wheeled about, stared at her, and then strode to a cupboard on the bulkhead and dragged out a large volume, which I recognized in amazement as a Bible. He slammed it down on the table beside her. Miranda, says he, and his voice was hoarse, either with rage or fatherly concern. My child, it grieves me to do this, but I must. Swear to me on this book that no unworthiness, no impropriety passed between you and this creature.
Oh, Papa, what a fuss. All about nothing. This is all silly.
Silly, be damned. Balls paterfamilias. Put your hand on the blasted book, girl. He seized her wrist and slapped her palm on the Bible. Now make your oath and take care. I, quid de quoque viro et quid dica saepe caveto. Take special care what you say of any man and to whom it is said. Horace. Mind, even with a rat like him, swear. I braced myself to leap for the ladder, resolved to kick the appalling Jumbo in the crotch, God willing. While the dear child had lied splendidly thus far, I knew she was convent-reared on all that hellfire and mortal sin bilge, and wouldn't dare perjure. And I stopped in the nick of time, for she was giving an angry little shrug, looking Papa sulkily in the eye, and swearing by almighty God that she had repelled my clumsy advances with ease. And it would take a better man than Flashy to drag her into the long grass, or words to that effect. Spring ground his teeth in relief and then spoke two words I'll wager he'd never uttered in his life before. Forgive me, my child, I never doubted you, but I know this scoundrel, you see. He turned his dreadful face to me, and if hair and claws had sprouted from his hands, I'd not have wondered. It would break my heart, snarls he, if I thought... But there... God bless you, child. He bussed her resoundingly on the forehead, and the little trollop gave him a smile of radiant purity. You are the bravest of girls and the dearest of daughters. Quam te Deus esse jucit. What God commanded you to be. Now go along to bed and give thanks to him who has guarded you this day.
Good night, dear Papa,
says she. And kissed the brute. She walked to the companion, and God help us, as she passed me, she pursed her lips in a silent kiss, and winked. Then she was gone, and Spring hurled the Bible into its cupboard and glared at me. And you, if you ever pray, which I'm damned sure you don't, can give thanks for the innocence of a good woman. A novelty in your filthy experience, is she not? Well, novelty was the word for Miranda, no error. If not innocence. Aye, she's as pure as you are, vile, as straight as you are, warped, as brave as you are. Bah! And she don't lie, either. He gave his barking laugh. So you needn't stand quaking, my hero. Sit down. Now, I'd stood mum and paralysed through the astonishing scene I've just described, because that's what you do when J.C. Spring is on the rampage. Why the devil he wasn't in Grahamstown hadn't crossed my mind. I'd been too busy thanking God that his daughter was a complete hand, and that the old monster had swallowed her tail whole. But since he had, why, all was well, surely, and I could depart without a stain on my character. I recalled my wits and met his eye. Two damn difficult things to do, I can tell you. Thank you, but I think I'll take my leave if you'll do no such thing, bawls he. Now that you're here, you'll stay a while and give me the pleasure of your blasted company. Sit, damn you! I sat, believe me, and he gave a great white-whiskered grin, chuckling, and poured two stiff tots from the decanter on the buffet. No orange this time, I think, sneers he. You'll want it straight if I'm a judge. Cigar or cheroot? You Far Easters like 'em black, I believe. Go on, man. Utrum, Horum, Mavis, Axipe. Take whichever you prefer. And take your ease, your health, while you've got it. I downed the brandy as if it was water, for I'd seen Spring jovial before and knew what could come of it. He seated himself opposite me at the table, sipped and wiped his whiskers, and eyed me with genial malevolence. I'd as soon be smiled at by a cobra. So you didn't heed me, says he. Well, you've more bottom than ever I gave you credit for, and if you are half a man, you'll look instead of the toad I know you to be. I'd not blame you. Miranda is a maid to bewitch any man. I'm proud of that girl, Flashman, with good cause. And if I thought you'd laid a finger on her... Suddenly the hellish glare was back in his eyes and his scar was pulsing. I'd serve you as I served another reptile that tried to defile her. By God, I would. He smashed his fist on the table. I found her fighting for her chastity. I, in her own chamber, by heaven... with a foul, seducing, frog-eating son of a bitch who sought to have his vile way with her when my back was turned. My daughter, the bastard. There was spittle on his beard. What do you say to that, eh? When a maniac inquires, answer.
A damnable. French, was he? Well, there you are.
Do you know what I did to him? His voice was soft now, but the empty eyes weren't. I stripped him stark and cut the life out of him. 61 strokes. And you wouldn't have known he was human. Murder, you'll say.
No, no, not at all. Quite the...
But the fact is, Flashman, I was beside myself, cries this raving ogre. Aye, homo extra est corpus suum cum irascitur. You remember? An angry man is beside himself.
Absolutely. May I trouble you for the brandy, Captain?
There were those suspected me. Do you think I gave a damn? It was just, I tell you, condign punishment, as the articles say. And that lass of mine, that young heroine, I'll never forget it, never. Fighting like a tigress against that beast's base passion... But not a tear or a tremor. Thank God I came in time. You should have seen her base passion a few hours ago, thinks I, and quailed at the memory. God, if ever he found out. He sipped brandy, growling, came out of his reverie of Miranda worship and realized he'd been confiding in the scum of the earth. Bet you were no threat to her. He curled his lip. No, not you. You see, Flashman, I could trust her virtue to be stronger even than your depravity. Else I'd never have let you within a mile of her, let alone permit her to beguile you here. Aye, that jars you. Oh, you've been had, my son. For an instant, the pale eyes were alight with triumph, and he was scowling again.
But I've been through hell this day, knowing she was within your reach. My skin crawls yet at the thought of it. But she's my daughter. Steel true, blade straight. And too much by you or a dozen like you. It hit me like a blow. I'd known there was something horribly amiss when he'd arrived unexpected. But then Miranda had quieted him. And he'd been civil for him. And only now was it plain that I'd been trapped, most artfully and damnably, by this murderous pirate and his slut of a daughter. But why? It made no sense. He had no quarrel with me. He'd said so in those very words. What do you mean? What do you want of me? I've done nothing. You heard her. Nothing, you say? Oh, you've done nothing today. I know that, or you'd not be alive this moment. But think back 10 years, Flashman, to the night when you and your conniving whore Willink crimped me out of Orleans. I'd no hand in that, I swear, and you told me that I bore no grudge. His laugh was a jeering snarl. More fool you for believing me. But your wit's all in your loins and belly, isn't it? You can't conceive what it meant for a man of my breeding. My eminence, damn your eyes. A scholar, a philosopher, honored and respected, a man of refinement, a master and commander even in the degraded depths of a slave ship. A man born to have rule. Aye, better to reign in hell than serve in heaven. Roars he, spraying me with his incoherent rage, so consumed by it that for once Latin quotation failed him. To be hounded before the mast by scum who wouldn't have pulley-hauled on my ship, herded with filthy packet rats, fed on slop and glad to get it threatened with the cat, by Jesus. I stare at you. I, John Charity, springfellow of Oriel. Damn them all to hell, thieves, trimmers, and academic vermin. His voice sank to a hoarse whisper, for he was back on the Oxford tack again, contemplating his ruined career, his berserk fit over, thank God. For I'd never seen him worse. He took a huge breath, filled his glass, and brooded at me. I cleaned the heads on that ship, Flashman, all the way to the Cape. His tone was almost normal now. Thanks to you. And you think a day has passed in 10 years and I haven't remembered what I owe you? And now here you are, at last. You may agree with Horace, I think. Raro anticadentem scelestum deseruit pede poina claudo. I see from a vacant gate that you're no better acquainted with his works than you were on the college. Damn your ignorance. So I'll tell you it means that justice, though moving slowly, seldom fails to overhaul a fleeing villain. He shoved the bottle at me. Have some more brandy, why don't you? Your flight's over, bucko. This was desperate, but terrified as I was, I could see something that he'd overlooked, and it spurred me now to unwonted defiance, though I came to my feet and backed away before I voiced it. Keep your bloody brandy and your threats, because they don't scare me, Spring. I don't know what your game is, but you'd best take care, because you've forgotten something. I'm not a friendless nobody nowadays, and I ain't some poor French pimp neither. You think you draw water? Well, you ain't the only one. A heaven-sent thought struck me. Your Governor Grey has charged me, Sir Harry Flashman, V.C., K.B., and be damned to you, with a personal message to Lord Palmerston, do you hear? So you can come off your blasted quarter-deck, because you daren't touch me. I cast a quick glance at the companion, ready to run like hell. The pale, hypnotic eyes never blinked, but his mouth twisted in a grin. My, what a dunghill rooster we've grown, to be sure. Vox et proeteria nihil. You're a voice and nothing more. But you've forgotten something, too. No one saw you come aboard here. It was a hired rig that brought you to my house, and my servants are safe folk. So, if the distinguished Flashman with all his trumpery titles were to disappear, why, he sailed on the mail for home. And if, by chance, word came months from now that you never boarded the mail, a mystery. And who more baffled than your old shipmate John Charity Spring? What, silent, are we? Stricken speechless? He pushed back his chair and reached a flask from the buffet. You'd better try some schnapps, I think. There, don't bite the glass, you fool, drink it. Christ, what a craven thing you are. Sit down, man, before you fall. fitiant artus aegrae contagia mentis. When the mind is ill at ease, the body is somewhat affected. As Ovid would say if he could see you. And rest easy. I'm not going to harm a hair of your precious head. There was no comfort at all from him. I knew that diseased mind too well. He meant me some hideous mischief, but I could only wait, shuddering, until he told me what it was, which he was preparing to do with sadistic relish, brimming my glass and resuming his seat before he spoke. When I heard you'd landed, it was a prayer answered, but I couldn't see how to come at you until Miranda showed the way. Oh, she has all my confidence, the only creature on earth in whom I put trust. Let me beckon him, says she. And didn't she just on that first night at Government House? It was just gall to my soul to see it. My girl. And you, you dirty satyr. A dozen times I would have cried it off for fear of what harm might come to her, but she laughed away my doubts. Trust me, Papa. My girl, do you wonder I worship the earth she treads on? Would you believe? He leaned forward, gloating. 'Twas she advised I should warn you off. He'll come all the faster to spite you if he thinks it safe, says she. She knew you, do you hear? Oh, yes, Flashman, she knows all my story from Oxford to the Middle Passage, and she's as bent on settling her father's scores as he is himself. We have no secrets, you see, my girl and I. I could think of one. Oh, she'd tricked me into his clutches, right enough. But she'd humbugged him, too, whoring away like a demented succubus while he was biting his nails over her supposed virtue. And the doting old lunatic believed her. God knew how many she'd been in the bushes with, his stainless virgin. If only I dared to tell him. Suddenly I felt sick, and not only with fear, something was wrong with me innards. And you came to the bait like the lustful swine you are, says Spring. And it's time to cast our accounts and pay, eh, Flashman? Oh, you know me. With any other of the monsters I'd known, I'd have pleaded and whined and tried to buy off. But he was mad, and my mind seemed to be growing numb. Another wave of nausea came over me. My head swam, and I took a stiff gulp of schnapps to steady myself. Belay that, growled Spring, and snatched the glass from me. I don't want you dead to the world before I've done. He seized my wrist. Sit still, damn you. Ah, pulse sluggish. Very good. He dropped my hand and sat back. And as the sick fit shook me again, I saw that he was smiling. Now you know what a crimped sailor man feels like, says he. Yes, the schnapps is loaded, just like the mixture that fat tart slipped to me in Orleans.
This book is continued at this point on the other side of this cassette. Please reverse or turn the cassette over now.